Okay, we start here at the top of Bum Amin Aleph. Tana Chado, Ovei Kulchavim Shin Nadev Nedavada Vedek Abayit Mikablim Emenu. That we do accept monetary gifts towards Vedek Abayit from the Ovei Kulchavim. Tan Yidach, we have an alternative right that says Ein Mikablim. So Amar Rabbi Ila, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Lo Kasho. That's not a problem. Habit Chila, Habit Sof. One's in the beginning and one is in the end. Damar Rabasi Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Betchila, Afilu Maim. In the beginning, we don't even accept water and salt from them. So, in the end, dvar ha-misuyam emikablim, when it comes to something that's defined or that can be seen or identified, then we don't accept it from them. Dvar she'enu misuyam, something that's unidentifiable, unrecognizable, or unique, then we do, mikablim, we do accept it from them. So, hechi dami dvar ha-misuyam, what does it mean that it's something that's identifiable? I'm Rabbi Yosef, Ramon, Amma Kalio, Orev. It's like the Amma for the Orev. And what this is somewhat unclear. Rashi, over here says, Amma Kalio Orev, where these are the spikes that they used to put on top of the heichal to prevent the pigeons from landing on the top of the heichal. So they put spikes on there to prevent them from nesting and flying above or bringing tum'ah over the heichal. And that was the aman kalia. As Rashi explains, is something that is either one of two lishonot, that is, kalia is lishon migaresh, that means to chase away, or he brings down a second interpretation, is kalia means to be moneya, to remove or to hold back. Vayikalea am melehavi, or vayikalea geshem. That's one possibility. Kalia means to stop, or to remove. And the first interpretation was that it was to migaresh, is to chase away. Now, there are two possibilities of what it looked like. Rashi over here says they were large spikes, very large spikes. And they were called Amma because that's the amount of barzel, the amount of metallic material that went into them. That's how wide they were, how long they were in terms of metallic material. And a person who says Tam, that they're going to donate barzel to the Mikdash, gives an Amma, which would be the size of this Amma Kalia Orev. The other possibility, Rashi in other places, says that they were actually triangles. They were not spikes, but rather sharp edges. They were pointed edges of a square, meaning the triangle side of the square. And you've seen probably many of the models of the Mikdash. They have those pointed triangles that go around the edge of the top of the Eichal, based on that Rashi. Over here, Tosafot, as well, we saw it back in Menachot, on Kufchet, Tosafot brings down the Oroch, who says that it's actually not metal spikes, but rather a scarecrow. He says, just like they put scarecrows out in the field to stop the birds from eating the seeds, they put a scarecrow up on the Eichal in order to scare away the birds from landing on there. But then he also qualifies the statement, says that was only in Mikdash Sheni. But in Mikdash Rishon, they didn't have anything on there. Because in Mikdash Rishon, when the Shekhinah was Shoreh, they didn't need anything on top of the Eichal because the presence of the Shekhinah was enough to stop the birds from landing on there. In the second bite, where the Shekhinah wasn't present, then they needed something to prevent the birds from landing on top. Tosafot here, as well as in Menachot, brings a challenge because it says by Shlomo Melech in Moed Katan that they put on Amat Kalia Orev in the time of Shlomo. If that's the case, then even in Bayit Rishon they had them. But suppose suggest over here that maybe that was in the pre-building stage, which is that Shlomo was uncertain as to whether the Shekhinah would be Shoreh. So he built it, he did his Ishtadlut, to make sure that the birds wouldn't land there. In the end, when the Shekhinah was there, he didn't need it. But he did make the Ishtadlut from to make sure that there wouldn't be birds on there. So that's this Amma Kalia Orev. So since that is an identifiable item, either according to the Oroch, because it's a scarecrow, according to Rashi, because it's a defined spike or metallic, sharp-edged object, so that we wouldn't allow them to donate, because they could point to that and say, we gave that specifically. And Rashi brings that there's two problems with that. One problem is, Shinere ba'ayin, se'em mekamim em d'gnayhu. So the gabe, us, it's a gnai, that this Ovei Kulchavim is the one who's donating this item. But number two is, v'od shemit parimbo. The second issue is that they take pride in that. And then they feel like they have chilek b'beit elokeinu. That's also a problem. So from both tzadim, it's an issue. Therefore, we don't allow a davar misuyam. Whereas a davar sheinu misuyam, where they stam give kesef, they can't identify it. They can't point to what they gave. So meitiv Rabbi Yosef. All right, we're going to get that. Tchila and sof over here is the difference between the beginning of the building of the Mikdash versus after the Mikdash is built.
But if it gets in the beginning, it gets money.
No, because that's what we saw the pasuk in Nehemiah yesterday. It was really in Ezra. But it's Nehemiah speaking. Lo lachem lanu Libnot bayit lelokeinu, that you're not allowed to have a part in the building of Mikdash because of Rifayon Yadayim. So here we said, Bintchila, we will not accept it. Here it says, we won't accept it in the beginning, just like there. But later on, once it's already built, then we're willing to accept it as long as it's not a Davar Misuyam. No, so that's what Rashi brings down, two interpretations, what beginning and means. Rashi says, one is, Mitzchilat Binyan, we worry about Rifayon Yadayim. Therefore, they're intending to stop the building or hurt us with the building. Therefore, we don't accept it. The Sof, the Chazeket and Bedek, once it's already standing to pay for maintenance costs, that we allow. That's one possibility, Rashi says. The other possibility is, Mitzchilat, Shalaitai Matan Shal Obdek Chavim Aleihem, in Mikabim. In the beginning, where we weren't forced because of the permission of the Obed Kuchavim to do it, but in the end, we did require that. And Rashi says this is difficult. He says, Rishon Ikar, because he says, Reinotam, Da'ako Yimei Bait Shini Aitayimat Obed Kuchavim Aleihem. Ubit Kulato Yoter Misopo. Says that the entire period of Bait Shini, there is no independent Jewish monarch. There's no autonomy for the Jews. Now, it's not true. There was the period of the Chashmonaim where they were autonomous for a short period of time. During the Bait Shini, they're not autonomous. Now, Rashi makes a second claim, which is that they were more pressured under the Persian rule than they were under the Roman rule. So, question if that's whether that's even historically true. And that with the Romans, if they gave a command, if you didn't listen, what happened? Versus if the Persians gave a command, what would happen? So Rashi claims that the Persians, we could ignore them a little bit, and it would have been fine, whereas the Romans, you couldn't ignore them. So it was imat malchut. It was just a response to the fact of whether you have to accept it or don't have to accept it. Rashi doesn't like that interpretation. It favors the first interpretation, the difference between building and maintenance. But the conclusion will be then that for building, you are not allowed to accept the gift because we're worried about Rifayon Yadayim. For maintenance, you will be allowed to accept it, but there's a qualification. As long as the maintenance gift is something that's not Mistuyam, something that's not identifiable. Now we have a question. Meitiv Rav Yosef. We have a pasuk in Nechemia, Perek Bet, pasuk Chet, V'Gerich El Asaf, Shumer HaPardes, Asher LaMelech. Nechemia, when he speaks to Koresh about going up to Yerushalayim, he says, can you write me a letter to Asaf, who takes care of all of your orchards, but really here means forests, and that he'll provide the timber, he'll provide the wood that is needed for the building of the gates and the walls of Yerushalayim and the doorways. So you see that they accepted from Koresh, they accepted a gift. And you see the whole thing there. Nehemiah's offered all this stuff by Koresh, or meaning he asks for a lot of it from Koresh to go and build. So says, now, in terms of the Malchut, we don't worry about it because they don't back out. Meaning, Rashi says, Hoyo mitzkulatolu tovanit kavein. Since they intended, when Koresh gives permission in the beginning, he's giving it because he is fond of Nehemiah. And therefore, we are not worried about him backing out or pulling the plug on the building. So that's why we say, okay, you can accept gifts. If the gift problem was a problem of Rifayon Yadayim, over here, we're not worried about it because the Malchut never backs out of their position. Once they've committed to do something good, they don't back out of it, so we don't worry about that. The Amar Shmuel, my Shmuel says, Iyamar Malchuta Akrana Ture, if a monarch says that I'm going to take out this mountain, it's not going to be here anymore, Akar Ture Velo Adarbe, he's going to take away the mountain, and he won't reverse that policy. Once he says he's going to do something, they're going to do it and not reverse it. It's interesting that Shmuel's the Bala Memra here, because Shmuel is also the Bala Memra of Dina de Malchuta Dina. So it's interesting that here also he has a certain view of the Malchut being both positive, and when they say they're going to do something, they're going to do it and not back out of it. We have the example is important by Achashverosh. She says something that's sealed with Chotam HaMelech can't be taken back. They had to send another letter that basically gave them the right to defend against the first letter. They couldn't rescind the first command. So that's a type of idea here, that the king never rescinds an order that's already given. So you're right, it has both positive and negative implications. I think here Shmuel speaking in a more positive light, especially given the context of the Mikdash. And again, he's the Baal Memra of Dina de Malchuta Dina, which is interesting. The other thing is the example, which is interesting, is Akar Ture. If he agrees that he's going to take out a mountain, then they take it out. Which is, if you go to Herodian, Herod built there his mountain, that was where his sarcophagus was found. But when he built the mountain, it wasn't tall and wasn't high enough. So he cut down the mountain that was next to it. He took it out, and then he made the mountain Herodian. So I don't know if this is a veiled reference to the fact that, you know, they take down mountains, or just an expression, an idiom that he's using. Amrei Yudam Rav, Obed Kuchavim Shifrish Truma Mikiryo Bodkimoto. If an Obed Kuchavim took off, separated Truma from his grains. Butimoto, we see, ibidat Israeli frisha. If he did it based on being sumech on whatever the Jew would say, I'm doing it based on the way a Jew would do this, then tinatein the coin, then you give it to the coin. Bimav, tuna geniza. If not, then we worry about it, putting it into geniza. Shinan shema bilibolu shamayim. That really he intended to give it to God. So the problem here is when he's makdish the truma, how is he makdish the truma? When we separate out the truma, we know that the truma is going to be given to the kohen. What's interesting here is the truth is that the truma really does belong to Hashem, and Hashem gives it to the kohenim. It's gifted to the kohenim, even though the chelik that we're separating out is really an indication of our acknowledgement of Hashem's participation in the growing. And then we give a portion of that to the Kohen to represent that. But over here, if he believes that he's going to give it to the Kohen or he's going to do whatever Jews do with it, then we give it to the Kohen because then we know that's his intent. On the other hand, if he doesn't say that, then we worry about the fact that he was actually makdishit. Not that he intended to give it as truma, but he was makdishit l'shamayim. And now it's hekdesh. So therefore we put it into geniza because it might be hekdesh from a goy. Meitevei, ovi kochavim shenitnadei korah, that he gave or donated a beam to the Mikdash, v'shem katuv alei, and the Shem Hashem is written on the board or the beam. But kimoto, we check it. Imamar b'dat Yisrael yofreshetia, if he says that he intended to give it like any other Jew would give it, meaning as a donation to Yigod, then you carve out, you cut off the piece where the Shem Hashem is, v'ishtamesh b'motar, and then you use the remainder of the board. V'im lav, if not, do not gniza. Again, you need gniza. Again, we worry about the fact that he was makdishit hekdesh gamur, and therefore as if he donated to Hashem. And the evidence being that he wrote the Shem Hashem on the board, so that would be indication of the fact, then we put it into gniza.
As Rashi is pointing out, this Tosefta from Megillah is speaking about Bizman Hazeh. And therefore, it's Tu'una Gniza, it's Asur B'Hana'ah, because we said, maybe Liba L'Shamayim L'Shem Hekdesh. And in Zman Hazeh, Hekdesh is Asur B'Hana'ah. And therefore, it goes into Gniza. Now, with regards to Yigod, the part that you cut out, and then you use it, since it's Bizman Hazeh, what are you going to use it for? The answer is for the Beit Knesset, you're going to use it for the shul. Any other Jew today would do. They wouldn't think about Mikdash, they wouldn't think about the Shem Hashem, they would think about donating it to the Beit Knesset.
Taimo, the Gemara says here, by that brayta, the reason is the shem katuvala. That the reason that we say that it is possibly donated to Hashem directly is because there's a shem Hashem written on it. The being a geniza. Therefore, it requires geniza. Hain shem katuvala. Had there not been a shem Hashem on it, loy by geniza. Then it sounds like it wouldn't need geniza, and that challenges the statement of Yehuda Marav, who says that it always goes into geniza, like the truma. The Gemara says, no. Hu adin afagabdein shem katuvala. Even if it's not written there, nami by geniza, it still requires geniza. V'akamash want afagab the shem katuvala, you go with mishtamesh b'motar. It's the other side that's the chiddush. That even though there's a shem Hashem on it, if he tells us he's giving it like any other Jew,
and he'll donate it to a Beit Knesset like any other Jew today would do. They wouldn't think about Mikdash. They wouldn't think about the Shem Hashem. They would think about donating it to the Beit Knesset.
It wasn't directed specifically to Hashem. Then we say, fine, cut out the Shem Hashem and use the rest of the board. The fact is, even though the Shem Hashem is written on it, we still allow you to use it. So Safot over here says something very interesting. Like Abe Safrut. He says that here the Gemara implies that the area where the Shem Hashem is written, you have to cut that area out and then use the remainder of the board. It's not that you just carve out the Shem Hashem, you have to cut that entire piece out. When you cut that entire piece out, then you can use the remainder of the board. So based on that, Tosafot says, with regards to Safrut, that Mashma Yedei Shechach Tocha Korah, V'lo Yehaneh Me'ol Tocha Chatichash Keneged Hashem, Dimkomo Mi'akad Yedesh Hashem. The location itself was Nit Kadesh. V'esh Zeher, Shekotvim Sefer Torah Tfilin, you write a Sefer Torah Tfilin, V'garuru Mekom Hashem, and you carve out, meaning that they made a mistake. When they make a mistake, you have to cut out, scrape out, but you can't erase it, so you have to actually take out the whole piece with the Shem on it. So then, She'en Lekhto Bimkomo. Don't write in that place. If you have any klach left underneath, you should not write in that place because it's mekadesh the mokom, not just the shame. Unless you have to cut it out entirely and then put a patch underneath it, that's the only way you could write on it because now it's totally, it's panim chadashot bolukan. So it says if you just scrape the top layer off and the bottom layer is there, that's not sufficient because it's mekadesh the mokom. And over here he says when it says yigod, it means to take it out entirely, to cut it off entirely. The shame, shalovim komo, lav kadosh. The reason why we say over here when he wrote the shame Hashem on the board, why is it not kadosh? Why is it not problematic? It's because a shame that is not in its normal location is not kadosh. So let's understand that Rashi again here brings two possibilities about what that is. One is, enu makadosh, elu makom hashem. Enu kadosh, the first interpretation means is that just the location of the shame is kadosh, but the remainder of the board does not become kadosh. It does not draw along the whole board to it to become kadosh. You can cut out that location and everything else is chulin. It's not mekadesh the board, it's only mekadesh the makom where it's found. That's one interpretation in Rashi. The other interpretation in Rashi, actually, which he does not favor, but has major nafkaminot today, is that lishna achrina is shem shalom yikomo kagon agabe korot v'kelim lo kadesh, which is about, we're going to get this in a mission in 1 second, that if it's placed in a normal place that normally people don't write the Shem Hashem. You write the Shem Hashem, as Rashi says, Lokadish, Lavi Mekomol, on the Yar. You write on paper, you write in a Sefer Torah. Context is important. Shichtova Mikra Im Hashem. You have to write Pasuk with the Shem in it. Ela Ketini Netel, the way it was given by Hashem. About Shem Levado, if you just have a Shem Hashem floating around, Lavi Shlovim Komov, Lokadish. It's not in its place, and it's not Kadosh. So this has implications in terms of, for instance, if you have the quote-unquote Bible that they leave in the hotel rooms, it has an Old Testament, New Testament in it. Question there, if the Shem Hashem that's written in it, does the context tell us that it's not necessarily Kadosh? The newspaper prints something that has the Shem Hashem in it. Is it not Kadosh? Because that's not the normal location. That's not the normal context in which it's found. If it's written in a context in which it doesn't belong, then it's not Kadosh. So there you pour in these locations or these instances, we'd say that the Shem Hashem is here. It's not really written here. They didn't intend it to be a Kadosh. They just brought it down. They're quoting something. They're taking a picture of something. They don't intend it to be Kadosh. And if it would not be Kadosh. But if it's written in its context in a proper place, then it would be Kadosh. So that's an interesting nafkamina to that second reason. Even though Rashi doesn't favor that reason would have nafkamina in terms of the Shem Hashem that many times is accidentally found today. Newspapers, magazines, emblems. They find the Shem Hashem, whether that should be Kadosh or not. We do treat it as Kadosh. But according to the second reason of Rashi, you would not treat it as Kadosh.
Detanya.
Right, as Tosefta Megillah, that they were donations that were given to the Beit HaKnesset, not to the Mikdash. Hayat Katuv al Yadot HaKelim is written on the handles of the utensils, al Karei Amita, the legs of the bed. Or is it you go to the Gnoz? You just have to cut out the shame and then put it into Gniza. Does not have, except for its Makom, it's not Mekadesh. Sounds much more like Rashi's first interpretation, that it doesn't make, it's not Mekadesh outside of that specific location. So now, Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rabba Baravua. Omer Sela Zulet Staka, someone who donates a Selet Staka, Mutar Lishnota, he can change it. I mean, the money is fungible. He had promised, or his dedication is not the coin in particular, it's the amount of money that he designated. If you say, I'm going to give the Sela, it doesn't literally mean this coin is going to Staka, it means that you're going to give a Sela worth of value to the Beit Knesset. Sover me now that small, that he can only change the usage for himself in Bacherlo, for others not. Because we would assume that when he donates the Sela, he has in mind a dispensation or a tnai, a condition that I can use it for my own purposes. I just have to replace it. But what he doesn't have in mind is for someone else to use it. That's not within the purview, or that wouldn't be the natural condition that he would place on the donation. So therefore we would say that if he wants to use it for something, fine. If someone else wants to use it, no. Amar Rav Ami, Amar Rav Yochanan, ben latzmo, ben la'acher. Doesn't matter. Anybody can use the coin. Coin, again, is not kodesh itself. It's just the amount that is kodesh. Amar Rav Zira, lo shono el damar alai. It's only if he took it as a neder. Aval amar arei zu. If he says arei zu, bina bai l'mitva, then he has to give it. So the difference between a neder is that you obligate the gavra to give the money. If you obligate the gavra, then since, as Rashi points out, you have achrayut on the coin now, you're responsible for geneva v'aveda. If it gets lost, you have to replace it. So over there, we give you a dispensation to use it in the interim because you're responsible for it. But Harizu, when you give it a deva, when you're speaking about the chayfetz itself, the object itself is kadosh, not the gavra's obligation, and if it gets lost, that's it. That coin's lost and it's done. Then we say, no, don't use it because there's no responsibility for you. So it's interesting, the way Rashi phrases it is that because kibla b'achrayut, since you have responsibility, inyan geneva v'aveda kididei dami, it's as if it's yours. The acceptance of responsibility for Geneva Neveda makes it as if it's yours, and therefore you have more permission to use it. In the Gemara and Sukkah, when it comes to Matana Menat Achzir, when you give a gift with a condition that it be returned to you, the person who holds the gift in the interim, the Gemara says, has full kinyan over it, has full ownership rights over it. Over there, the Rosh claims the reason or how you tell that you have full ownership rights on it is if you're not chayav for Geneva and Aveda. That's how you know it's yours. If you're not responsible to replace it, if there's Geneva and Aveda, that's called yours. When it's yours, you don't have to replace it. When it's someone else's, you have to replace it. So the fact that you're chayav in Geneva and Aveda, according to the Rosh, is an indication of lack of ownership. Over here, Rashi, interestingly enough, says that the responsibility of Gneva Veda makes you more of an owner rather than less of an owner. So you could argue in both directions, but it's just interesting to note that Rashi here claims that it's an indication of more ownership, whereas the Rosh in Sukkah says that it's an indication of less ownership. But the difference being between a neder and a nedava, by a neder, since you're responsible to replace it, we allow you to use it in the interim. Whereas because of a nedava, you're not responsible to replace it. We say you can't use it or appropriate it for something else in the interim. And then Gemara says, Matkifla, Rovo, Adarabo, Ipcho Mistabra, makes more sense the other way around. Amar Zu, if he says Zu, and he makes it into a nedava, he's Makdish the Chefetz itself. Mishtamishpa, he should use it. Because by using it, he'll be Sholeach Yad Bapikadon. The item now really belongs to the Beit Knesset. Belongs to Ekdish. You're a Shomer over it. If you go and use it, you're then your Sholeach Yad. Your Sholeach Yad, now you become responsible to replace it. So the Beit Knesset or Hekdesh will be in a better position if you are Sholeach Yad. Because until now, they could only get the coin. The coin got lost, it was their problem. Now, after you're Sholeach Yad, if the coin gets lost, it's your problem. So we want you to increase your responsibility towards this coin. So be Sholeach Yad in order that you'll have more responsibility over here. So therefore, if it's an Nidavai, but more reason for you to use it. Aval Amar Alai, if he just says that it's a nether, lo, because you're not increasing your responsibility over here. Your original responsibility was for Gneva Aveda. After you use it, you're still responsible for Gneva Aveda. You're doing nothing to benefit Hekdesh or the Beit Knesset. You're doing nothing that's in their favor. So it's one thing if you're benefiting them, then we allow you to use it for the trade-off that you're going to benefit Beit Knesset or Hekdesh. Since you're now more responsible for the coin, we allow you to utilize it. On the other hand, where you utilize it and they get no more benefit, we're going to say no. Because so, then you're what's called a Sholeach Yad. A Shomer that uses something that is under his watch, that's equivalent of quote-unquote stealing. It becomes your responsibility now. And now if it gets lost or breaks, if you were a Shomer Chinam before, and you were not responsible for Onsin, Gneva Naveda, now you become responsible for Onsin, Gneva Naveda, because you used it. So we're saying that we give him a dispensation to be Sholeach Yad because of the added responsibility. I'm not going to say that it's usher and go and do the Isser. I say that the framework in which it's done, we assume that the Beit Knesset would be in favor of you using it, because then you would take more responsibility. Therefore, we say it's mutar lishnota. Not that we say, go ahead and be Sholeach Yad, be Isur, and then you'll be responsible. Rather, that becomes a priori. We say that you're allowed to use it, because we know that there's utility to the tzibur from that.
In other words, even though there's a price in both cases,
but the achrayit in the first case comes when you took a net there. So they get no benefit by the fact that you use it or utilize it now. Because they already have that responsibility. By the nedava, where the responsibility is created by your usage of the coin, we allow you to use it to create that responsibility. So the original assumption, it was only for you, not for anyone else. The Gemara said, no, it's for everybody. Then number two, we said, only by a neder, not by nedava. Because by neder, you have responsibility for it, so we'll allow you to use it, because you're going to have to replace it. It's like it's yours, as Rashi says. Then a Rava comes along and says, just let's say the opposite. If it's already, you're responsible for it, then why use it? The tzibur is going to get no more benefit from your utility than it had before. You're responsible for it, now you're responsible now. So forget it, don't use it. We don't want you to use it, we want the money. And then by the nidava, by your utility, actually adds to your responsibility now. Since the tzibur gets utility from that, we want you to use it so that we now have you more responsible for the coin. My answer is in the end, Ella Loshna, makes no difference. In the end, it makes no difference. Doesn't matter if it was for you, for someone else. Doesn't matter if it was a neder or nedava. In all of these instances, you're allowed to utilize the money because, again, the money is fungible. When you make a promise to give a coin, you do not intend for it to be that coin or that exact money. You intend to give that amount to the Mikdash or a Beit Knesset. Tanya Kavata de Rava, we have a break that supports the position of Rava. Neder staka vein akdesh staka. Neder is staka and akdesh is not staka. My kamar. What does that mean? It's a cryptic statement in the Braita. Lo neder velo hekdesh tztaka. Neither a neder nor hekdesh go to tztaka. Neither of them are tztaka. They're independent entities. They have nothing to do with tztaka. Elolav hachi kamar. We must reinterpret the Braita to read this way. Tztaka hari bevalte acher. One who nidre tztaka, one who promises to give tztaka, has a restriction in the Torah, alav in the Torah bevalte acher, that you may not delay or tarry in paying off your obligation of tztaka. Gemara in Rosh Hashanah learns that out from Darshan's the pasuk v'ficha arizut tztaka. It breaks down the pasuk that's written by Nidarim and it says that even includes nidrei tztaka. Ve'ena kekdesh. It's not like kekdesh. Jil kekdesh asur lishtemushe be. If you're magdish something, you can't use it. If you're makdish an object, the object now becomes osur b'mi'ila, and you can't use it. V'ilu tztaka, shari l'shtemushe be. But tztaka, you are permitted to use it. So there'd be a differential or differentiation. V'hekdesh, there's mi'ila, and therefore it's not permissible to use it or utilize it. Now then, by Beit Knesset or by tztaka, you do have this dispensation to use it. So even though you're not allowed to delay or tarry in paying it off, you are allowed to utilize it in the interim. That would support the position of Rava from this Breita, that it doesn't matter how you donate it, that you'll be have permission to use the tztaka, which would support that position of Rava, that even by Harezu, you should be permitted. Amar Rav Kahana, Amrita Lishmaita Kameda Rav Zvid Min Narda, I said over this Memra to Rav Zvid from Narda, Amar Atun Ochi Matnitin Le. La, you learned the whole sugya this way, that above we had Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rav Bar Avhu, so that he made this statement. And then after that, we had the clarifications by Amar Rav Ami, Amar Rav Yochanan, we have Rava interjecting, trying to qualify the statement. That's how you learned it. Ana Nachman, Nina Law, this is how we had it. Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rav Avhuha. It's interesting over here, I don't know if this is a misprint or really there are two different people. Yeah, before Amar Rav Bar Avhu. And then here you have Amar Rav Bar Avhuha. Again, I don't know if that's just, there are two different people, their name was Avua and Avuhu were the same person, wherever it's a misprint. It's just interesting that note that difference. Amarav, Omer Selazu, that's Dakab Mutadish Nota, Ben Yatzmo, Ben Acher, Ben Amar Alai, Ben Amar Ezu. That these qualifications were built into the original statement. It wasn't that we had some other people qualifying the statement, but rather that was the original statement that included the first statement, and all these qualifications afterwards were all said by Amarav Baravu. Amarav. Here they add Rav in. I mean, the key difference is that it's all qualified by the original statement. But you're right, it does add in Rav here. Tarnabanan, Selazul Tzedakah. Person says, I'm going to give the Selazul Tzedakah. Achelo Bata Lide Gabai. Until it reaches the hand of the Gabai, Mutar Lishnota. You have permission then to utilize the coin or exchange the coin and give them other monies. Shabbat Liyad Gabai. Once it reaches the hand of the Gabai, Asur Lishnota. Then you can't change it anymore. I mean, once in the hand of the Gabai, it's locked in. Ini, is that really true? Ah, Rabbi Yanai Yosef Upora. Rabbi Yanai was the Gabai Tztaka. He needed personal needs. He had personal needs for the money. And therefore, he borrowed the money from the Kupat Tztaka and paid it back. So here you have the Gabai Tztaka. The money's already reached the Gabai Tztaka. And you see him utilizing the money and paying it back. When it says, Shani Rabbi Yanai, the Nechaluhul Anim, that Rabbi Yanai is different because it's actually to the benefit of the Anim. The Kama de Mishaye, Maisi Umaiti Luhu. It's very interesting, Gemara. It's very difficult. They said that Rabbi Yanai used to borrow money from the Kupat Tztaka for his own personal needs, personal benefits. So now the Kupat Tztaka is empty. And he needs to give money to the Anim, he needs to feed the Anim. So what does he do? He goes around to the Balabatim and says, we got empty coffers. You gotta cough up some more money. We have nothing for tztaka. Cough up more money. So the aniyim benefit from Rabbi Yanai's borrowing. Because when he borrows, he can claim that the kubat tztaka is empty. And masi, it's like if I'm get mi'useh, you could force the balabatim to pay more money into the kubat tztaka. So because of this fiction that the kubat tztaka is empty, he's able to raise more money for the aniyim. It's pretty incredible. Because he's borrowing the money for personal benefit, for personal reasons. And based on that fiction, he's now raising more money for the aniyim. So the aniyim benefit, because when he borrows money, they get more money in the end. But still, the whole thing is created by a fiction of his personal need to borrow money from the kupat tztaka. Interesting comment about why it was permissible over here by Rabbi Yanai. Even though normally what we say is that when it's in your personal possession, you're allowed to switch it. It's in the hand of the Gabai, you're not allowed to switch it. Tosafot over here qualifies that. It's the bottom Tosafot on Daf Vav and Aleph. He says, Mishabat liyad Gabai asur lishnotah. He says, Dafka yachid. It's only true by an individual. Aval b'nei ha'ir rasha'im. People of the city, they can't change it. Even once it reaches the hand of the Gabai, if it's the tzibur as a whole that is determining the tztaka, the tzibur can make decisions to switch it even after it reaches the hand of the Gabai. So this limitation of reaching the hand of the Gabai is only a limitation for a yachid. But for the tzibur, they'll have to switch it. But he brings an additional qualification, v'dafka l'dvar mitzvah. It's only true if they switch it to another mitzvah. So they can reallocate it for another mitzvah. They can't reallocate it to whatever they want. They can't somehow use it for whatever they want. It has to be something that's tzarchei tzibur, or something that's a mitzvah. But they can still switch it once it reaches the end of the Gabai. Two things that are important. First of all, that limitation by the Gabai is only for yechidim. And number two is, even where the dispensation for the tzibur to switch it, even after it reaches the end of the Gabai, it's gotta be the dvar mitzvah. And then there's a very important Tosafot here on the Amud Bet, which is, Ad Shabbat Yad Gabai Mutar Lishnota. That you have permission to switch it until it gets to the hand of the Gabai. To what can you switch it? What can you do with this money? So Rabbeinu Baruch Perush, Mutar Lishnota, Mamash, L'mitzvah Acheret. Could switch it to a totally different mitzvah. Lishnota over here does not mean, like we saw before, but Amar Rabba Baravua, that you're allowed to use this money and then replace it with another money to give that tzedakah. Rabbeinu Baruch says over here, Lishnota means literally. You could say, instead of giving this money to tzedakah, I'm going to purchase a lulav with it. Lishnota means literally. It's mukdash to mitzvah. Which mitzvah? Undetermined. Even though you said, I'm giving this money to tzedakah, till we just the end of the Gabbai, you're allowed to switch it according to Rabbeinu Baruch, even to do another mitzvah. But, Tosfot says, and that's the way we read it, Lishna lishnota lo mashmakein. Lishnota does not sound like that. Elakach matzate kadu betosfot rabbi rab Moshe me'avira, biktivat echiv, from a letter from his brother, uperish lo mashma lishnota lo mitzvah acheret. Can't switch it to another mitzvah. Hilkach, nira lomar de levota kamar. It's like what we said above, and that's the way I read the Gemara. This means to lend the money out, aval lishnota vaday asur. To switch it, not allowed. So the makloka dir in the Balei HaTosafot, what lishnota means, it's a very big nafkamina. You promise money to tzedakah, can you then switch it to be for another mitzvah? Or does it just mean you can lend the money out, you can use the money, but you just have to replace it in the end, you have to pay that, you have an obligation to pay it to tzedakah. Makloka is being the Rabbeinu Baruch, and the letters from the Rav Moshe Me'avira. In the end also, Tosafot says, Rishayim b'nei ayir lasot kupat amchui, haynu bishut b'nei ayir, aval gabay atzmo asur. The other qualification is when the tzibur is allowed to switch things around, it's only with the permission of the tzibur, not the gabbai himself. The gabbai himself is not allowed to make those decisions. Tzibur is allowed to switch it, even shalobu makom mitzvah. Not like it'll be said before, it only has to be a mitzvah, but it has to be at least something that's tzorchei tzibur. Tzibur agrees to switch the money that's given to the gabbai, as long as it's used for tzorchei tzibur, expenses of the tzibur, that's allowed. One should not lend out the money once it reaches the end of the gabbai. Even with the permission of the kaal, came in she'in zed tzorchei tzibur. Because that's not tzorchei tzibur. If you lend the money out from the kupat tzedakah, how is that tzorchei tzibur? How is the tzibur benefiting from the fact that you're lending out the money? Unless the money, of course, is lent to the tzibur for the expenses of the tzibur. But other than that, there's no benefit to the tzibur. So only when there's benefit to the tzibur can you switch the money out. Can you use it? Lishnota should load the Dvar Mitzvah, even though the Dvar Mitzvah is on the Tzorchei Tzibur, but it's gotta be Tzorchei Tzibur. Lending out the money to individuals is not necessarily Tzorchei Tzibur. Right now the Gemara continues, very interesting issue. Tanravana, Yisroshit Nadev Nora or near the Beit HaKnesset, a Jew who donates a candelabra or some sort of candle holder, or here, a wick holder that holds the Shemen for burning the candles in the Beit HaKnesset, Asur Lishnota, can't switch it from its use. It doesn't matter if you switch it for mundane use or for a mitzvah. You can't switch it to be used for something that's mundane. If you have another mitzvah to do with that, you can. Now, and how do we know that? We know that from the statement of Rav Asi Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Ovei kuchavim. A non-Jew who donates a candelabra or a candle to the Beit Knesset, again, not candle over here in their time, in the Gemara's time, ner meant the holder for the oil and the wick. As long as the name of the donor has not been forgotten yet, you can't switch it. Once the name of the donor is forgotten, what can you switch it to? Why is the example brought here about a non-Jew? If you're Israel Nami, you can't switch it. Only for a Dvar Mitzvah. What's the difference? Why by an Ovid Kochavim, by a Dvar Mitzvah, as long as his name is associated with it, you're not allowed to switch it? And by a Jew, you're allowed to switch it. Why is there such a difference? Ovid Kochavim hold the pay. Ovid Kochavim is going to raise a cry. He said, I donated this candelabra for this use in the Beit Knesset. Now you're using it for that? He's going to be upset that you appropriated it for something else. Aval Yisrael, the low pay, you shall be down. A Jew knows that the Beit Knesset doesn't need the candelabra here, but there's another mitzvah that they needed for in the Beit Avel. They needed a candelabra. For the Almona, they needed a candelabra. Whatever it was, the other mitzvah that they needed it for, the Jew accepts that they're going to use it for a mitzvah. Whatever mitzvah it is, wherever the utility that the tzibur needs, that's fine. The non-Jew, he donates it, he expects it to be in the place that he donates it. He expects it to be exactly what he donated it for. That's an interesting story. Shazrak Tayo. Shazrak, this non-Jewish merchant, Indav Shragal Beit Knishkai, donated a candle to the shul, to Rav Yehuda, Rav Yehuda's shul. Shanya Rachvo. Rachvo changed its use. Vikpad Ravo. Probably should be Rabbo. because Rabbi Yehuda is a second generation Amora. Rabbi Yehuda is a Talmud of Rav, Amar Yehuda Amar Rav. And Rabbo is a third generation Amora, as opposed to Ravo, who is a later Amora. So it would make more sense that it's Ikpid Rabbo. Ikad Amre Shanya Ravo, that Ravo changed it, be Ikpid Rachvo. Again, here it makes more sense to say that it was Rabbo. Ikad Amre Shanya Chazne de Pumdita, the Chazanim, Shemashim of the Shul. Ikpid Rachvo, and Rachvo got upset. Ikpid Rabbo, and Rabbo also got upset. Man de Shanya Savar Lo Shchiach. Guess what? Shazrak is a merchant. He's traveling all the time. He's not going to come back here to see it. Sometimes he drops in to see how the Jews are doing. And if he drops in and he sees his candle's not there anymore, he's going to be a little upset about it. All right. Mishnah. Hagoseis vayotzei liharig. Someone who's in their deathbed, death rows, and someone's being taken out to be executed. Execution, Jewish execution. Lo nidar ve lo nerach. He has no value. And he has no erech. V'chanina ben Akavi omer nerach, mipnei shedamav ktsumim. Erechin has nothing to do with value. It has to do with looking up the tables, age and gender. So here he still has an age and gender, even when he's taken out to be executed, so then you can look up the erech. Yossi omer, noder umarich umakdish, v'mezik chayav. Yossi says that he can be noder, marich, makdish, can do all these items, and he does damage, he's chayav. So anyway, seems like apples and oranges. Rabbi Yossi is talking about something that has nothing to do with the remainder of the Mishnah. But here he's talking about what the executed person can do. Where it says, the Mishnah before is talking about people using the object being the executed person. Say, Bishlam al Goseis lo nidar delabar damimu. Makes sense that a Goseis has no value, because it's on his deathbed, and therefore there's no value to donate. V'lon erach delabar hamodo varochu. And now we saw earlier in the Perek that it is not ve'emid ve'erich. They have to stand up before the coin to be assessed. Since you can't stand up and be assessed, there is no din of erech. El yotzei liharig, the one is being taken out to execute. Bishlam alo nidar tolav bar damimu. It makes sense that you can't take a nether about him because he has no value. He's about to be executed. Nobody would buy him. Alo nerach amaylo. Why can't you have erech in here? It's a good claim that Rav Chananya ben Kavya has in the Mishnah, the Tanya. Manayin al yotzei liharig, vomer echad, and someone else says, erko alai, shalom arklum. How do I know that? Talmud Omar, the Pasuk says, Kol Chayrem lo yipadeh. Any Chayrem will not be redeemed. So read the Pasuk beyond the Parsha of Arachim, but by the Parsha of Charamim, it says, Kol Chayrem asher yacharam min adam. Any Chayrem that you make from people, lo yipadeh, should not be redeemed, motumat. So the Chayrem over here is someone who's being put to death. Someone who's put to death, lo yipadeh, has no redemptive, and has no redeeming value. I mean, that's in both senses. No redeeming value. You think even before he had the psak halacha that he's going to be put to death. Amalomar min adam v'lo kol adam. Some people have that problem, not all people. Meaning before you have the gemar din, he still has that value, but after the gemar din, he doesn't have it. Or b'chanina ben akavya damar nerach ibnei shadamav ktsubim haikol cherem amay avidle. What does he do with that puzzle? Ratani Rabbi Shmuel bno Rabbi Yochanan ben Brokomer lefish matzino lemumatim bidei shemayim shunim amon mitkaper lahem, who has a death sentence from shemayim. He can pay off, he can pay kofar, and he gets out. Like, for instance, a shor that kills another individual, your shor that kills another individual, says over there, v'gam balav yumat, that the owners should die. The owners over there means mita bidei shemayim. That's from the limudim over there, that you don't die from your money, what your money does, you only die from your own actions. So therefore, you can't be put to death bidei adam, only bidei shemayim, and yet, it says, im kofar yushat alav. You can pay kofar. You can pay money to get out of the mita bidei shemayim. You can pay kofar. Yochalaf bidei adam came. I would think that even an adam can do this. Tamalomar kocherem lo yipadeh. A person is not allowed to redeem themselves from the death penalty. En liela mitot chamurot shalonit nashik adam lekapara. I would think this only references severe or extreme mitot that have no shkagah, that has no kapara and it's shogeg. Meaning that there's no chatat, there's no gola and it's shogeg. Mitot kalot shalonit nashik adam lekapara minayin. Tamalomar kol cherem, all cherem. Any death sentence that applies to a person, that death sentence can't be waived through paying kofar. So that's the way that Rabbi Chanina ben Akavi will learn it, and it has nothing to do with arachin, it has to do with death sentences and the ability to redeem yourself in a death sentence. And now, Rabbi Yossi Omer, noder umarich, v'tanakama mikamar dolo. Who is Rabbi Yossi addressing? The Tanakama never said he couldn't do these things. Here he's talking about the object, now you're talking about that he's the subject. In that he's actually doing the actions. So, Abba Ella ben Noder Marichu Makdish Kliyam Alo Pligi. Everybody agrees that he can be Noder Marichu Makdish. Livei Beim Hezik. If he does damage to someone else, he's out on his way out to be sentenced, and he does damage to someone. Tanakaba Savarim Hezik Enu Chayab Tishlumim. If he does damage, he has to pay it. Because he's Savarim Hezik Chayab Tishlumim. He does have to pay it. But Maika Mifligay, what's the argument? Amar Rav Yosef in Milvel Peh Govim Na Yoshim Kamifligay. In oral loans, can you be goveh from the inheritors afterwards? The inheritors of the estate is an oral loan considered to be a lien on the estate. Because over here, he does damage, but he was yet to be brought to din on that damage. So, Tanaka Masar Milbal Peh, Eno goveh mina yoshim, he can't claim it. Rabbi Yossi Savar, Milbal Peh, goveh mina yoshim. Even an oral loan, you can take out of the yoshim. Rabba Amar Dukuyama, Milbal Peh, Eno goveh mina yoshim. Everybody agrees that if it's an oral loan, you couldn't get it out of the inheritors. Vahachaba Milbal Ktuba Betaraka Netflegay. Then there was some lying assumption in the previous part of the explanation was that even though this is written in the Torah, it's still classified as a milvel peh. So Rava goes to undermine that assumption and says, no, that's exactly what they're arguing about. They're arguing about the fact that when it's something's written in the Torah, is that a milvel peh or milvel ktuva? Tanakam is a milvel ktuva, but Torah la ktuva b'shtar damya. It's not like it's written in a shtar, and it remains an oral loan, which you can't claim. It's as if it's written in a documented loan, when it's written in the Torah, and therefore you have a claim against the inheritors. Some people write it on this memra. I would say they are hushuv chaval b'chayrim chayav. He damages others, he's chayav. Other people who damage him are patur. Shimon ben Elazar mer afhu im chaval b'acharim patur. Even if he damages others, he's patur. Shloni tana chzaret amidat beitin. Because you can never take him back to Beit Din to actually implicate him for the hezek. You can never put him on trial. So therefore, he's never going to play it. Michlal, Tanakama saver nitin lechazaret amidat Beit Din. What do you mean that the Tanakama thinks you're going to take him back to Beit Din to paskin on his hezek? No way. He's going to have to be executed. We're not going to take him back to deal with his hezek, as Rashi says it's an inui adin. We're not meaning I had the din. He's inviting me executed. Let's execute him. We're not going to take him back for another trial about the hezek. So must be, I'm Rabbi Yosef. This is the qualification we have. They're arguing about oral loans, whether you can take them out of the yoshim. Tanakama zara, milvah peh, govem in yoshim. Shem alazavar, zavar, eno govem in yoshim. You can't take it out. And Rabba Amar, again, Kuliyama, over here, it's Rabba, versus over there, before it was Rava, that it should be consistent in all cases. It should be Rabba. Which makes more sense. With Rav Yosef, it should be Rabban rather than Rava. So the sheet that before it said Rava, but it should be changed to Rabba, makes more sense. The Rabban and Rav Yosef, who are peers. That's exactly what the argument. Therefore, they can claim against the Yoshim. It's not like it's written in the Shtar, therefore it's an oral loan. Oral loan, you can't make a claim out of the Yoshim. So they just, the same arguments that they're laying out, the same qualifications or explanation of the machlok that they're applying to this braita rather than to our mishnah. But the same idea being apparent in both cases, that they're arguing about this point, about the obligation of this person who's being taken out to be executed. Again, Rashi says, it's only a Jew who's being executed because a Jewish Beis Din, once they give a psak, is not going to back out of it. It suggests that a non-Jewish Beit Din can be convinced, can be bribed, they can do something to reverse the course, and therefore none of this applies to a person being executed by the Malchut, rather it has to be someone who's executed by Beit Din. Okay, we'll stop over here.